Last week we talked about loving God, loving people, which you might remember was Jesus's. It was his summary of the Old Testament. It was a summary of how to get to heaven. It was a summary of the Christian life. Okay, love God, love people. I mean, that's it, right there. Okay, and then we spent a bunch of time talking about what loving people means. Well, now we're going to get into what loving God means. We're going to spend a few weeks, actually, on that as we go through these next few passages in Luke. I invite you to take out a Bible, turn there with me to Luke 10, which is on page 735 of your pew Bibles. And you know, so okay, so we're talking about don't just do something, sit there. All right, sometimes it's a really bad thing to sit. Sometimes it's a really bad thing not to sit. And this passage is going to straighten out which is which. All right, if that made no sense, that'll make more sense by the end. And I was thinking about this. I was sitting around thinking, okay, when is it a bad thing to sit? Well, here's a clip showing you one video clip showing one.
Broke into my car and stole the airbags.
Airbags?
Yeah.
So weird. Is anything else missing?
No.
Okay.
Why would they just break in and steal the airbags?
I don't know. We should follow police.
Okay, so this is from a movie, and I was like, is that really possible? And so I was looking on YouTube, and yes, it is possible. Here's a real life clip from somebody on an airbag. This is a little louder, so watch out for this. All right, sometimes it's a bad thing to sit. All right, sometimes it's a bad thing not to sit. And so let's get into our passage today, see which is which. Look with me at verse 38. Okay, let's read this passage. Just follow along with me as I read it. It says, as Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. All right, so Jesus and his disciples, they're traveling around doing ministry, and they don't have a home, as we talked about, so they would stay with people. And so they stay with Mary and Martha along the way. Actually, it says that them and their disciples all stayed there too, okay? Now, can you just imagine this for a second? Preparing and hosting for 13 grown men. Have you guys ever hosted that many people in your house before? I'm sure some of you have. you know, I was talking to our youth pastor, Ryan Jinks, about hosting huge numbers of people. Actually, when he goes down and visits his wife's family for the holidays, they all stay in one home. And they've known to have like 30 people in one home. And a bunch of pets, everyone brings their pets too. And so it's just an absolute madhouse. I was enjoying listening to his stories of what it's like. He's just like, you can't hear yourself think, you know, you want to hide, you know, but you can't. There's just wall-to-wall people. People, sometimes they'll forget to lock the bathrooms, and so people are running in on each other and then, you know, showers. And I mean, it's just terrible. But he said, you know, despite everybody sleeping on the floor and sharing sicknesses and all this kind of stuff, and not being able to get a shower until 2 in the afternoon. He says the meals are the most incredible thing about it all. When you got that many people, it's like a mess hall. You know, you have to do these huge bags of potatoes and all this. And dishes take hours, he said, afterwards. So that's a little bit like what Martha's feeling here, right? That she is hosting for this huge crowd of people. And let me tell you, it was not a house nearly as big as any of us live in. I mean, it was this tiny little hut, basically, in Israel at this time. And, you know, it's just tons of work. It's this overwhelming thing. In fact, it makes me wonder sometimes why ladies subject themselves to this kind of torture, you know, at holiday season particularly. I'm sure if I asked any of you, you would say, Why do you do it?
You know,
because you love your family, right? You love people. You love serving them in this way. And, you know, in fact, Ryan told me that his mom, his mother-in-law, when he would go to visit with the 30 people or whatever, she'd come to him, even with all the insanity, and she would say, "Hey, Ryan, look what I made for you." You know, and it's his favorite dessert thing. She's showing it to him in the fridge, and he's like, "Keep it in the fridge hidden down there, because otherwise it's going to be gone." But they just love, you know, a lot of folks just love hosting and hospitality. They do it because they love people. And in fact, that word for work in verse 40 that we read, that word work is the same Greek word used for Christian service. It's the same thing that Jesus commands us to do on a number of occasions. Like in last week's passage, right? Of caring for people who need it. But not only that, I mean, it's verses like Romans 12:13 say this: share with God's people who are in need. Practice hospitality. Over and over in Scripture. So that's our first point here today, okay? We see Martha as a companion to Jesus here, and that serving is helpful and good. Serving is helpful and good, okay? It's good. It's a good thing. It's a biblical thing. Okay, she's hosting. She's probably washing their feet. She's taking care of them. She's acting like the Proverbs 31 woman, right? Who's just this, like, hardworking, you know, woman. Exemplary. Like the woman in 1 Timothy 5:10, the women who were well known for showing hospitality, washing the feet of saints, devoting themselves to good deeds. All right? Many of you are like this. Many of you are like this. This is the kind of woman Martha was, taking care of her family, serving in the church, serving in the community. But our text says that there was another woman present who was not doing those things, at least not at this very moment, right? Verse 39 says that Mary was sitting at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. Okay, Martha was serving, Mary was sitting. There's a comparison, that's our second point here, that serving varies between people. Have you ever noticed that about life? It's just the truth about life. Okay, some people serve more than others. Sometimes for bad reasons. You know, at your workplaces, there's some people who drive you crazy because they don't work and pull their weight like others. Other times for good reasons. You know, they can't serve as much because they're getting older, or they've got challenges at home, or like in this case, really good, very good reason Mary has, which we're going to see in a little bit. But verse 40 says, look there with me, it says that Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." Okay, when I read this, I'm thinking like, whoa, Jesus has gotten an emotional woman on his hands here. Okay, no offense. But he does, right? You can feel it bubbling out, right? She's mad. And she's saying, "Come on, Jesus." You know, she's sitting there listening to you. You can see all the work that's happening. You know, just, you know, get her over here. You know, she's blaming her sister. She's ticked off at her sister, but it's sort of bleeding over onto Jesus, too. He's complicit, you know, in her sister's, you know, problem. Anybody ever feel this way? I mean, I feel like this is super common in our families, particularly, right? You know, you ever been mad? Anybody ever been mad at a family member for not pulling their weight? You know, all the rest of you are lying. We all have been there, right? And you know, maybe it's the dirty dishes, maybe it's not helping with the kids, whatever. All of us have felt this way, frustrated at a family member. We feel like we're doing more than our share, and they're not, you know, helping, and so we get resentful, and we start making little comments, right? "Oh, so you left the dishes for me again." You know, and then we start making little nagging comments to try to, you know, get them to do what we want, you know. It's, "Oh, yeah, I can't use that because you haven't fixed it for me yet." Right? This kind of stuff. And it starts to come out. This is our third point here, that there's a complaint in our text that serving can bring bad attitudes. Super common in the church, too. You know, I remember as a little kid listening to my grandma talk about her helping at church. And I remember her talking about how she always made coffee for church. And she talked about it a lot. And it was like, I'm the only one who ever makes coffee, or one of the only three or something that ever make coffee at church. And you got this sense like it was some cross between a badge of honor and like a really sort of resentful at the rest of the church, you know? And how many times have we seen this in churches, right? Or in ourselves, right? That this starts to creep up. We feel like we're doing more than we should. Warren Wiersbe says this. He said, if serving Christ makes us difficult to live with, then something is terribly wrong with our service. You know, let's just take a second here and think about, why does this happen? Why does this happen? I mean, usually these people are like the best kind of people, right? I mean, they start out with great motives, serving the Lord, right? Or something. And it sort of devolves into this resentful, ugly thing. I just want to suggest a few reasons why I think that this happens. It's not just because of the other deadbeats in our lives, right? There's something in our hearts where this happens. The first thing I think is it sometimes happens because we've internalized unreasonable expectations. I think we have a slide for this. Basically that, yeah, why good servants turn ugly. Here's one reason. We've internalized unreasonable expectations. And what I mean by that is sometimes we are thinking and feeling that we have these expectations on us. Sometimes they're true, sometimes they're not true. You know, it's like, oh, I want to make them proud, or I don't want to let them down, or they're going to be mad at me if I don't do whatever it is. Or maybe God is not going to accept me if I don't do these things that I feel like he has to do. Whatever it is, we're trying to meet these unreasonable expectations in our head, and we're feverishly killing ourselves in the process. You know, maybe Martha had unreasonably huge standard of what hospitality should look like for Jesus. I mean, it's Jesus, right? I mean, you should have like I probably should have a 7-course meal and extra desserts, and maybe we should have a band playing. And I mean, you know, I mean, who knows the things going through her heart? But we do the same thing to ourselves, right? Unreasonable expectations. Sometimes we have to force ourselves to drop our expectations down a few notches, lower our standard of excellence, or just be okay with upsetting some people. Second thing, I think sometimes we turn ugly because we're focusing on the tasks instead of the people. Sometimes we're thinking completely in terms of output, right? Accomplish. And we get frustrated at the people who aren't, you know, sort of helping make that happen fast enough. You know, the tasks, you know, whatever it is, we can start to subconsciously see people as a means to an end to finishing this task. See them as our pawns rather than as God's people. Maybe Martha was falling into that trap. Another thing, third thing, is sometimes we're just plain overworked and overtired, right? And sometimes we work so hard and so long, we're not even logical anymore. We're just overwhelmed, we're easily frustrated, we take it out on our best allies. I'm sure Mary had helped Martha with the housework countless times in the past, but she just wasn't helping right at that second when Martha was feeling overwhelmed, and boom, she cracked. You know, it reminded me of this clip from the Shrek, one of the Shrek movies, where he's at his kid's birthday party, and everyone's asking him to do things, and he's getting the cake, and he's doing all these things. Let's just watch the end of this little clip of what happens to Shrek.
Shrek, you gotta cheer up.
I'm in a great mood, actually.
Oh, I'm gonna lick me a rainbow.
Donkey.
As long as you're not doing anything, how about one of those famous Shrek roars?
Hear the roar.
Let me say this straight, Butterpants. An ogre only roars when he's angry. You don't want to see me angry, do you?
Do it.
Hold it together. Just hold it together.
Hey, he's getting away. Do something.
Oh, good. What happened to the cake?
Trust me, it's an improvement.
You licked it.
No.
Just because you're an ogre doesn't mean you have to eat like one.
Looks like you forgot the candle.
Stop! Okay, just watch the cake. I'll go get some.
Watch the cake?
Oh, where's the cake?
It's a cake, y'all.
What?
No, don't try.
Peg, I believe you promised my son a roar.
Do the roar.
Roar.
I don't like it.
Peg, we need another cake.
But it's all the cakes.
Then one roar.
Hey, everybody. Shrek's going to do his famous ogre roar.
Not now, Donkey. Peg, are there any cupcakes?
We ate some, too. They have lollipops.
No, I ate some.
What? You didn't share? Well, you didn't share with the croissant.
Everything's going to be okay.
Shrek, what's going on? Oh,
Shrek, your hands away.
Do the roar.
We need the cake.
I think we've all been there. I think this is a good reminder, too, with the holiday season coming. Right? All right, fourth thing. Sometimes we've forgotten why we're serving. You know, Peter was apparently here at this event with the disciples, right? And later, he writes in his book, 1 Peter, he writes this. Offer hospitality to one another without grumbling. Each one should use whatever gift he has received to serve others so that in all things God may be praised. He's saying, don't let your hospitality and your service degenerate into grumbling, but remember who you're serving. That you're serving others, but ultimately that you're serving and pleasing and praising God. That I think that's huge, isn't it? Many of us find ourselves in those four things, right? That we forget. Well, there's an even bigger, much bigger lesson here in this text yet that we need to get to, and that's our fourth main point here, is that serving does not replace listening. Look with me at verse 40. Martha asked, Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me. Martha, Martha, the Lord answered, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. I love how Jesus gently repeats her name, Martha, Martha. You can tell he's had experience talking emotional people down. Right? Martha, Martha, I love you. You can tell, sense his gentleness. But he refuses to do what she asks him to do, as any good leader has to do from time to time. And not only that, he tells her that Mary has chosen what is better, sitting at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. That spending time with Jesus was better than serving him. Actually, that phrase, sitting at his feet, was a common way to talk about becoming a disciple of someone in that day. When in Acts 22, when Paul talked about being a disciple of the famous teacher Gamaliel, he talked about the fact that he sat at his feet. Okay, so we would say he studied under, right? That's the way we would say that, but they would say he sat at his feet. And so here, this is especially surprising because women weren't allowed to be formal disciples in that day. And Jesus is saying, hey, she's sitting at my feet. She was sitting at Jesus' feet. She was being trained as a disciple. She wasn't just cooking and cleaning. Which, by the way, isn't it cool how Jesus elevates women over and over? The least, the last, and the lost in this culture, he's always elevating as we're going through Luke. It's also interesting to me, today more and more voices are saying that educating women is one of the absolute keys to solving poverty in our world for lots of reasons. And here Jesus is blazing that trail 2,000 years ago. You know, he's open to that thing. But then he says, Martha, Martha, you are worried and upset about many things. Those words, worried and upset, in the Greek mean anxious and agitated. Earlier in verse 40, the narrator had said that she was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. That word distracted in the Greek literally means dragged away, carried away, pulled apart by her worries and stress. Reminds me of that passage that we looked at back in Luke 8, where the sower scatters seed, but there's one kind of soil that took that seed, but it was taken away, how does it say it, by the worries of life. It was choked out by the worries of life. and couldn't mature. One commentator writes, it's possible for service to Christ to degenerate into mere busy work that is no longer full of devotion to God. You know, it seems like it shouldn't work that way. That when we're trying to serve God, that we could just, it would just be right, you know. But instead, our hearts, they sort of drain sometimes. And our hearts, we're going through the motions, but our hearts are empty of our faith and our love. And they're full instead with anxiety and stress. It's so easy for me to struggle with this. I know a couple weeks back, before service, a couple of you grabbed me and were like, are you okay? Like, you don't even seem like, you know, I'm just anxious, you know. What's the solution? Verse 42 says, only one thing is needed. One thing. Sitting at Jesus' feet, listening to Him. Okay, some of you might go, man, like, I feel a lot of that anxiety. I feel a lot of where Martha's failing here. But it's hard for me to see how that one thing is going to solve my problem. You know, I'm so busy anyway, and you're telling me, okay, just do one more thing, Pastor. Thanks for nothing. Or maybe you feel whiplash after last week's message. You know, last week we're talking about serve others, serve others, serve others. And this week, don't serve, sit. You know, no, that's not exactly what we're saying, but let's unpack this, why this is the solution. First, from the text itself. Look at verse 42 how it says, only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her. Here's the reason why it's better. It won't be taken away. Now, of course, I think Jesus is meaning this in a couple different ways. He's saying, Martha, I'm not going to take it away from her. I know you want me to, but this is important. But I think he's also saying, the benefits of spending time with Him can't be taken away. They last forever. You know, not so with most of our tasks, right? I was mowing the lawn a while back now, but the last time of the season, and Marion was on my lap as we were mowing, and she says to me, Daddy, why do you make the grass shorter? You know, that's a tough question to satisfactorily answer to your kid, you know? You know, a lot of our tasks are like mowing the lawn. It's just gone. You know, temporary, forgotten in history, destroyed by the foolishness of others, like a mist. But time with Jesus is worth it. The benefits of it will not be taken away. You know, let's think about those reasons that we looked at before, and just think about how this contrasts with those things. Okay. Unreasonable expectations, for example. Spending time with Jesus helps combat that big time. It helps reprogram our heads so we don't have all these voices in our head telling you, you know what, to be the perfect parent, you got to have your kid in all of these things, and to be the perfect neighbor, you got to do all these things, and to be all this stuff. And spending time with Jesus and saying, okay, you know what, Jesus died for me to save me, and I'm in His grace. I'm in His grace. He loves me. He's the one, you know, it's awesome for that. No more hamster wheel. No more standard of perfection we can't possibly meet. You know, the second one, tasks over people. Spending time with Jesus, it helps shape our identity, not in what we do, but in whose we are. Remember we talked about that a couple weeks ago? Helps shape that. The third thing, you know, this overworked, overtired business. You know, stopping the hamster wheel, as it were, and spending time with Him allows us to be rejuvenated. The most current brain research is telling us that our brain desperately needs downtime to restore its crucial functions. Your brain doesn't work as well if you don't rest. Did you know that airplane pilots run out of gas with surprising frequency? It's really, really common, actually. Fuel exhaustion in the past 5 years has caused 238 small plane crashes in the United States. You know, it makes me wonder, what are they, you know, are they like, oh, I can make it. Oh, I'll make it, you know. What's the deal, right? I mean, but that's exactly what we do. That's exactly what I do in my spiritual life, in my physical life. You know I'm exhausted. I know it's at the end, but just a little bit farther, right? We do this. We're playing with fire. And then that fourth thing on the list that we looked at before, it helps us remember who we're serving, right? That spending time with him reminds us that he's the one in charge. He's the one we answer to. He's the one who has the instruction manual. There's nothing else more important. Now, passages like this, I think they impact us differently based on our personality. Larry Osborne has talked about how, you know, passages like this really impact him differently than a lot of us. You know, some of us, we hear passages like this, get away with Jesus, right? Spend time with him. And some of us in our heads, we're imagining like this beautiful scene with an Adirondack chair, and we've got our Bible, and it's just this amazing experience, right? And then some of us, like Larry, he said, for his short attention span, that doesn't sound like heaven, it sounds like hell. He says he feels like getting away, locking yourself in your closet and being isolated. For him, it seems like time out rather than some wonderful experience. You know, he's a real social, outgoing guy. You know, and people in time out, you know, in case you haven't had kids in time out recently, I got a 10-second clip to remind you what time out feels like for some kids. This is how you feel when you think about spending time with Jesus, locked away. You know, I'm sure that some of you resonate with this, but I was reading a blog from a Canadian pastor who talked about how he probably has ADD, and he's felt guilty his whole Christian life at how poor he has been at regularly reading his Bible every morning, like you're supposed to in Christian thought, right? And he wrote this. He said, the daily quiet time was definitely not a source of growth for me. He's a pastor, by the way. He said, yet I have deep biblical knowledge and a deep, passionate commitment to Christ. But I grew more from short, intense periods of critical study on the Bible, reading, researching books, writing, and teaching. I grew from learning from others, in reading and in hearing. I grew from bursts of intense prayer times. Gary Thomas has written a book called Sacred Pathways that delves into the role of our unique personalities and how each of us relate to God in different ways. Most naturally, you know, some of us intellectually, emotionally. I've got a slide here of just some of his pathways in case you've never seen this before, and it's helpful. You know, activism or art or nature or caregiving or worship. There's all kinds of different ways that we're wired to most effectively engage God and grow in God. Okay? All this reminds us, I think, that God made us differently, that spiritual growth comes in various ways, that there's not a one-size-fits-all approach. But at the same time, don't get me wrong here. The Bible is absolutely paramount to your growth and understanding it and thinking about it. Absolutely paramount. I'm just saying that there's all kinds of good ways to hear it and be impacted by it and grow in it. Okay, the word is primary. Mary chose to listen to Jesus' word. Early in Luke, we read, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God. Okay, we need this. What I'm saying is, it doesn't necessarily have to be alone. It can include interaction or music or spending time in nature, you know. All of us, we tend to learn things better when we're doing them and listening to them and reading them in all of these different ways, okay? Our passage isn't telling us how to listen to Jesus. It's telling us to do it, to make a priority of it. Some of you have told me that the best way that you learn the Word is through running in the morning, listening to podcasts of sermons. Others told me how they absorb the most in small group environments, and that's what they're in, small group all the time. That's the best way they grow. Others, Christian books or reading just a few verses and then thinking about them while fishing. There's all kinds of different ways. I'm not saying you don't have to read the Bible. I'm saying find, God gives you freedom to figure out the best ways to get it in your head and heart. Okay? Just like plants. Let me quote this same Canadian pastor that I mentioned before, the ADD one. He said this, even though most plants need the basics of light, water, and nutrients to live and grow, The amount, the frequency, and the sources of those basics differ for various plants. Some grow better in desert-like conditions, while others require swampy wetlands. Similarly, Christian spirituality requires the basics of Bible prayer, worship, and service. But how often, how much, and how they do it might vary depending on you and God's created design for you. C.S. Lewis said it this way. He said, God made us, invented us as a man invents an engine. A car is made to run on gasoline, and it would not run properly on anything else. Now God designed the human machine to run on himself, and he himself is the fuel our spirits were designed to burn and the food our spirits were designed to feed on. There is no other. That is why it's just no good asking God to make us happy in our own way without bothering with him. God cannot give us a happiness and peace apart from himself because it is not there. Okay, so get your fuel. That's what I'm saying. Get your nourishment. Prioritize listening to Jesus. I read a warning from Pastor Warren Wiersbe. He wrote, in my pastoral ministry, often I have asked people with serious problems, tell me about your devotional life. And the usual response has been an embarrassed look, a bowed head, and the quiet confession, I stopped reading my Bible and praying a long time ago. And he writes, and they wondered why they had problems. Jesus is telling Martha, and so many of us, okay, that these things that we focus on tend to be not needed. And the one thing, there's one thing that we often neglect, that's needed. It's our fuel. It's our protection. It's the solution. Okay, just think how privileged that we are to have that solution, to know that, to know him. You have this great blessing of having the one thing that you need, a relationship with Jesus Christ. It's not a relationship that's like a cookie cutter thing, a one size fits all, doing devotions, you know, morning devotions, same time, length, or something, but that's rooted in his love for you. He died on that cross to save you and me from our sins and give us this relationship with him. And so how are we doing at this? How are we doing? Let's make it personal. You know, I'll tell you guys, I feel like in some ways I feel like an addict facilitating the discussion group here on this issue because I struggle so much with busyness. And always, there's one more thing. Oh yeah, this will make it so much better. You know, I feel like Jesus is saying to me, Casey, you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. And you know what? I don't want the needless things. I don't want to spend time on the needless, right? It's part of how I'm wired. I want to do the needed, the one important thing. Guys, the world will keep rushing on, right? It's just going to keep... It'll be there later. And so let's take the time to pursue him. Maybe you too need to slow down. Maybe that's the way this passage impacts you. Maybe you're like Shrek or Martha and you've got a lot of stuff boiling in you, resentment. Or maybe your life is a mess and you just need the solution. A passage like this basically says, you know, friend, if you don't know which way to turn in your life, just sit down. Just sit down at the feet of Jesus and listen to him. So what's a specific thing you can prioritize? Maybe you want to write it in your bulletin today. This week, I want to do blank. Maybe it's morning devotion. Maybe it's digging into a Christian book. Maybe it's a prayer walk. Maybe it's a, you know, church events or personal worship time, whatever it is. But something specifically. Don't leave today, hear a message like this, and not apply it. The one thing we need is to be close to Jesus. Let me close with this illustration. True story from Stuart Sachs. He was a missionary in Paraguay, and while he was there, one of the Paraguay Indians, Maca Indians, named Rafael, came to his house to sit on his porch. And this puzzled him, and so he asked him, you know, what do you want? You know, why are you here? And he just responded, Ham Henikmet. Well, again, I asked, what I could do for him, but the answer was the same. And translated, it means, I don't want anything, I have just come near. He writes how he had just wanted to sit on my porch because he found satisfaction and pleasure just being near me. Like our kids often do. And this is what Jesus wants for each one of us, right? This relationship with him, where we come near and we love being near. Let's pray. Lord, as we've interacted with this text today, Lord, maybe there's somebody here.